Pulse Folk Life area. And those of you who've been around this area long enough today have heard me say probably more than once that what we're emphasizing are the maritime traditions of coastal and inland communities here in Florida. And in these communities, we can find a culture or a way of life that's different and small in large ways from the way of life in other communities where commercial fishing and water-related activities are not so important. And most of these traditions are passed on in the occupation of commercial fishing in its different varieties and in commercial fishing families. That's what we'd like to talk about for a little while this afternoon. I'd like to introduce our participants. On my far right, from Bradenton and the Cortez area, Linda Taylor and her husband Mark, and one of their daughters, whose name I don't know.
Dana.
And over here closer to me, Priscilla Bennett and her husband Lawrence, and their grandson, right?
Larry.
Okay, so we've got some
a
pretty big family here. Okay. Now, Mark, could you tell us a little bit about learning about fishing yourself, how you came to be a fisherman?
Well, I grew up in a fishing village, and I believe my father tried to discourage me the best he could. I think he just wanted something better for me, and he made me finish high school, which most of the boys didn't have to finish school, and I was mad at him for that at the time anyway. And no matter how hard he tried, I still ended up being a fisherman. And it's a rewarding life, not financially necessarily, but being your own boss and being able to achieve a living without depending on someone else, just yourself and the environment is brings a lot of self-satisfaction and all. And growing up in a fishing village is probably the best place in the world to me to grow up in, because there was plenty of work and plenty of play, and it was all around the shoreline, you know, painting boats and spreading nets. Back in those days, they was cotton and flax, and I wasn't big enough to spread them, so I limed them. And after that came nylon and monofilament, where we didn't have to spread net anymore. And but there was always lots of work to do, and it was a good lifestyle to grow up in, I think. I've enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Now, Linda, where did you grow up? Are you from a fishing village like Cortez, too?
No, I was born and raised in Bradenton.
In Bradenton. Were there any fishermen in your family?
Not that I know of.
No. Okay.
It was a totally new way of life.
What was new about it? What was most unique about it?
I had no idea of the fishing industry when I met Mark. I really didn't even know it existed as far as being in Bradenton.
Shame on you.
But that's, you know, the way I was raised. I just didn't know about it. We got fish from friends, and that was as far as I knew.
Yeah.
When I met him, it was a totally different life, completely.
Right. You ate a lot of fish then, didn't
you? Now he eats all the fish around the fish house, and I can't get him to bring it home.
Well, in your daily activities when you first married Mark, would you say it's like being married to anyone else who had a 9-to-5 job, or what?
No, I was used to sitting down at a table at 6 o'clock, meal prepared and eaten as a family. With the fisherman, you eat all kinds of hours. I'm up late waiting on him. I feed the kids earlier, and I wait on him till whenever he gets in to feed him.
Mm-hmm. Does that schedule change at all during the year, or is it pretty much the same?
It's different every day.
Yeah.
I never know when he'll be home. He might not come home at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I bought her a microwave oven. Really, it was for me.
Do you ever do any fishing on the boat at all?
I used to do a lot of it with him. Mm-hmm. He always said I was his good luck. But when the children came, I started staying home more.
Uh-huh.
And he's a perfectionist, and when you get on the boat with him, it's do it his way or not. So I, between that and other weather factors, I decided, well, when the kids came, I stayed home.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if other wives of fishermen who may have grown up in Cortez and other communities gave you any pointers on what to look out for, or how to adapt to being a fisherman's wife?
Well, she said once it's in the blood, it's there to stay. Uh-huh. And it is. He, okay. With Red Tide, he had to leave fishing for over a year. He worked at other jobs because the Red Tide was so bad, we just could not make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And but it pulled him back. He was back in it within a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. He's been at it ever since.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence, can you tell us a little bit about your fishing background?
Well, I come from old line of old fishermen. You know, old fishermen don't die. They just kind of smell away. But my great-granddad was a fisherman. My granddad was a fisherman. All my uncles that I can ever remember were fishermen. My dad was a fisherman, and his brothers were fishermen. And way down my line, and I'm kind of the last end of it. I've got one son, and he's legally blind, and I don't think I'll ever make a fisherman out of him. But if I live long enough, this one will be a fisherman if I have anything to say about it. Because I'm like Mark. It's a way of life. I've done a little bit of everything. I've drove truck. I've run bulldozer, drag lines, done everything else, but always come back to fishing because it's something I love to do. And I got real tickled about his wife there because this one's forever hollering to me, why don't you get off of that river out there? You know, to come in and eat, you know. And, you never know. Your schedule's always changing, but it's a way of life that I love. I'm my own boss when I do it, with the exception of her, of course. But I love it. There's times that it gets real poor, and the bank payments are coming regular, and the fish don't know that. And it gets terrible, and you kind of get disgusted with it, but then things pick up a little bit, and you wouldn't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And weather like with this little squall we just had here, just normal, you know, when them comes up, you just grab your rain gear and just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get up of a morning and it's doing like that, and while you're drinking your coffee, you just say, well, I got to get out and go, and that's all there is. You just get out and go in it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I went out in some awful bad weather and had some good catches, and then I went out in weather, if it had somebody with them, I'd let them kick me because I went out in it because I didn't catch nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way of life, and I love it. It's like Mark says, it's in your blood. It's just something you want to do, and if you love it, you do it. If you don't, why, you just don't do it.
Yeah.
As far as eating fish, I love them. I eat them probably three times a week, at least three times a week.
I'd like to ask Priscilla a question that I asked Linda. Did you, like Linda, come from a family that wasn't a fishing family and come to to marry a fisherman?
No, my father was a fisherman during the summer because he was fruit during the winter, and since fruit's seasonal, summertime you got to do something. You grow the garden and catch fish, and usually that's what you was raised on, what was caught and what you grew. Then my ex-husband fished.
Just a minute. But mostly what you was raised on was stuff you couldn't sell because they sold all the good fish and you eat the scrap.
That's true. The catfish head makes the best catfish stew, though.
The catfish head.
The catfish head.
Okay. We're going to get any of that here at the festival this weekend?
Not that I know of.
Oh, okay. All right.
Now, the catfish, you get a real big one, and behind the jaws is real good meat, and that makes the best catfish stew there is.
Two steaks on top. Oh, yeah. So, unlike Linda, you were pretty well adjusted to...
Yeah, I knew what to expect.
Well, Linda, Priscilla was just commenting about recipes and about cooking catfish. Were there a lot of things that you had to learn how to make involving seafood that you didn't know about before?
No. Cooking's always been something I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
I like to experiment. And his mom knew a little bit about it, and his dad was able to give me tips on cooking things, and I just got the cookbook out and started picking up on my own style, and I enjoy it. I like to cook fish. When we have company, that's all we fix. We'll get a mess of mullet and fry up mullet and grits and bean casserole and the whole bit. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
If I could just get him to bring the mullet home instead of eating it at the shore.
Now, since we're talking specifically about families and passing on knowledge, Mark, I was wondering if you could tell us about the chores that you had to do as a boy and compare that to the chores that your daughters have to do that may relate to being in a fishing family.
It was a little different for me. My father was very strict, and my grandfather, which I never knew, he passed away before I come along. He was even more strict, so... Well, by the age of 12, you were usually told, here's a skiff and some gill net, and you go make a living. Either you tie on with me and fish, or you fish with somebody else, but it's time to start making a living. It was different in my case, because, as I said, my dad did want me to finish school, but every other moment from 5 o'clock until midnight, I was fishing, and weekends and summer, so we did all we could of it as kids. Had a lot of chores. Mama's chores around the house would come first, and then I'd go down the shore and help Dad. I always ended up doing the copper paint in the bottom of the boat. All the jobs that nobody else wanted to do, I had to do. But my daughters, I don't have any sons. I don't know if any of the daughters are going to get interested in it or not. Right now, they don't seem to have a lot of interest in it. Doesn't break my heart or anything. I'd have probably been so hard on a son, he'd have hated me, so I don't know. Maybe I'm better off to have daughters. But I don't know. I'm pretty strict, too, I guess. It just runs in the family. But there was a lot of chores. I didn't get to play a whole lot. We found time to play, but the chores came first.
Priscilla, in your family, were there chores that you had to do growing up that were related to fish?
Well, the women always help make the line whenever you do a trot line. Instead of watching television, while you're watching television, you'll sit there and you'll be working on something. You'll be hooking and putting them up so that later on, whenever he's got to have hooks on that cat line, you got them ready. Also, whenever he comes in the daytime, he's going to go to sleep because he's been up half the night. So there you are. You've got to re-rack the line that he has run. If you don't, he's going to get up in such a mood, you'll wish you had.
Mark and Linda, I was wondering, since you live in Bradenton, which is certainly not entirely composed of people who fish as much as Cortez is there a different sense of a family from Cortez, a fishing village where many, many people are fishing?
Oh, yeah, it's a different atmosphere. When I was growing up, I'd never been to town, spent all my life either on a boat or around the waterfront. And we went to a fisherman's school. My father went there. And, it was one teacher for three grades. And you didn't have to wear shoes necessarily. I used to hide mine in the bushes because I never wanted to. And when they closed the school down and sent us uptown, I just realized there was a whole nother world out there and how different everyone was from us, or how different we were from them. And we didn't feel like we needed anybody or anything else outside of our own village and the environment we were in. But it's still that way. The kids that grew up in Cortez just stay right there, and they go away to service. I did, and you come right back home and go back fishing. There's really no other interest in your life, not much social life or too much of anything but fishing. If you're going to be a fisherman, it'll consume all your time, and what time you have left, you try to devote to your family, and it's hard to do. You get up before daylight, and you come home, you know, the kids are in bed. You don't see them awake a lot of times till the weekend comes, and you can name a whole bunch of drawbacks, but I wouldn't do nothing else.
Yeah. Interesting to think about the difference between living in a fishing community and living in town, as you say, and observing differences in the way of life. Did you notice that the people had common misconceptions about people that are from fishing families, or stereotypes, we might say, that are inaccurate?
Yes, sir. It seemed that way to me. We started a commercial fishing festival about 4 or 5 years ago in our village, trying to get the people who, not just the people who vacation in our area, but the people who live in town really don't even know too much about us, just as Linda said.
Public awareness.
So we're trying to create a better rapport with these people and get them out there and show them who we are and what we do, where their fish come from. It's an educational theme, and it's been very successful. We just have thousands of people come, and it's a frantic time for us, you know, trying to get them all in that fishing village. And we hold it right there and have all our boats on display and everything, and they're all interested, you know, unless that what they read in the newspaper is about all they know about us, and you know, and that's not necessarily always the case. So it's good that they come out to the festival where we can show them firsthand. Things like this are real good, in my opinion. I'm all for this type of thing, because this really shows what the fisherman's all about. And I take anybody and everybody fishing that wants to go. I carry the newspapers and the TV and neighbors. Anybody wants to go, I'm not afraid to show them what I do and get them out there and let them enlighten them, you know. So then they can go by word of mouth, tell somebody else. And if somebody says something bad about me, maybe they can stand up for me or something, you know.
That's right. That's right. When is your festival?
It's on Washington's birthday, generally, February
21st.
Every year. And it's a one-day event. We haven't got enough help to put on a two-day event, so it's usually on a Saturday in Cortez in Bradenton.
Any other questions? I've been asking all the questions here. How about some more questions about life in fishing communities and fishing families? Yes, right here. What's liming the nets?
Well, back when I was a little feller, these nets was made out of cotton, and the fish slime would rot the webbing. And so you get a bag of lime and you dump it into a skiff and get a few balers full of water. Now we use Clorox bottles for balers. Back then you made wooden balers. And you had net spreads, which you just see a few remnants of off of the front of our fish houses out on the flats now. And the fishermen, after every night's catch, would have to pull the nets out on these spreads and not bunch them up too tight, and they'd be on, they just would drape on these long wooden 2x4s, and the depth of the net, that's how wide they would be. And we would mend on those spreads, and we would lime and spread our nets there. And you pull it out at night, and I'd mix up the lime water and bail on that lime water on the web, and as they pulled it out of the skiff or off the back of the launch. And then you let it dry, and then you pull it back on before you went fishing. So it was actually much more difficult to be a fisherman in my daddy's day, and granddaddy and all, than my day, because you don't have to do that now with monofilament webbing. About the only thing that bothers it is sun, and you just keep them covered up. Some of the fishermen don't even mend their monofilament nets. I mend all my nets, but some of them just fish them out and hang in new ones. You just order new webbing and keep your old ropes and lead line and cork line and just hang new webbing right on your old hangings and replace your net like that. And back in those days, you just had to lime your nets. It was a necessity.
One thing you didn't tell them there, Mark, was it was about 100 degrees out there on them net racks where you were mending that webbing out there with that water,
that's
too.
Right.
Yeah, and the sand flies and skeeters.
Another question. No more questions? Okay, I'll ask one final question, and it's a pretty big question. I'll ask this of Lawrence to begin with, and then to Mark and Linda. What do you think the future holds for your children's generation in terms of fishing families? What do you think about that, Lawrence? What's the future hold for Larry here, maybe?
Well, I really don't know. The pollution in the rivers and in our lakes, in the streams, in the ocean is killing off everything. And I honest to God don't know what's going to happen. I've seen so much change in the few years I've been alive, and now that everything's throwaway, it's all thrown in the water. They can't carry it to the dump, and they can carry it on the water, but they don't bring it home. And the worst enemy to the commercial fisherman today is pollution, as far as I know. And what it's going to bring, nobody knows. But I honest to God don't know. There's been so many changes since I was a little fella growing up. I was on the docks when I was probably 10 years old cleaning fish and doing whatever. And like Mark was saying, out on the net racks helping patch nets and so on and so forth. And there's been so many changes, it's really hard to say. I honestly don't know. But I do know that pollution is the worst enemy of the people of the world today. If you take it out there, please bring it home.
Mark,
David,
what do you
not
think?
Not to be mean, but if he keeps on with this behavior, he's not going to live long enough.
Another thing they was talking about, the women, a commercial fisherman's wife being cooked. If you don't believe she's a cook, look at there.
I beg your pardon? Yes, these are the Taylors, Mark and Linda, and the Bennetts, Lawrence and Priscilla. Okay? All righty.
But he's a saltwater fisherman, and I'm a freshwater fisherman. He fishes for mullet and stuff off of the coast, and I fish in the St. John's River. And there's a big difference in the fishing we're doing.
Absolutely.
And I am retired now. I don't fish anymore, but I am retired. But that's been my livelihood for many, many years.
Mark, getting back to that question about the future for your children's generation, for fishing families. Too big a question? Maybe so.
I got a lot of answers. Most fishermen are kind of discouraged, in all honesty. It seems like we're part-time politicians anymore to survive. Fear and legislation or rules that may put you out of business like that. You may just wake up with a piece of gear being outlawed, and you have to stay more involved with fisheries management nowadays. Used to, a fisherman really all he wants to do is just go fishing. I brought home a little piece of paper this past week. A fisherman friend of mine there along the shore said, my wife said she was going to divorce me if I didn't quit fishing. And after that, it said, God, I'm going to miss her. You know? But, you know, that's all a fisherman really wants to do is fish. But you can't do that anymore. You got to run to Tallahassee. You got to go to a fish commission meeting. You got to be involved to provide input. And if you don't, you might just be out of business and not have any say about it. So you have to. The fisherman today has to be more politically involved than he really wants to be, but it's a matter of necessity. There's always going to be fishing. I'm fearful of what scale. I've always been fearful of the small-scale fisherman, if he's going to be able to continue. Our inland waters are being polluted, as he said. Habitat destruction is a major problem in my area. We get the blame for everything, but no one really wants to look at some of the problems we feel are really serious, where there's a seawall there, where there used to be a mangrove. And the biologists have taught me all the finfish grow up in these areas that are falling by the wayside, so it makes me wonder about, you know, if the fish are going to be there and the species that we're pursuing now and the added pressures of both recreational and commercial and fishermen alike, you know, and pollutants and stuff. We felt so strongly at home, we started the gillnet license at $300 a year. It was voluntarily imposed for habitat restoration projects in our local area, and we've been doing it for about 3 years now. We feel real strong about protecting what environment we have left and trying to redo some of the stuff that's been done detrimental to the shorelines. There's always going to be some form of fishing. I just don't know. I think the fishermen of the future are going to have to be able to adapt a great deal to the changes that are coming. They're going to have to stay in tune. And I feel just mostly kind of saddened by it all, because it's a tradition in my family. It goes back forever, it seems like, and I just don't want to see it end. And I don't think that it should end. I think that seafood is an important diet to people. I think that it's a respectable living. We got our share of outlaws, and I can't name a group that doesn't. So, you know, anybody wants to point any fingers, that's really not the name of the game, in my opinion. But I take a lot of pride in what I do, and I'm proud of it. And I'll do it the rest of my life, I'm sure. As far as my daughters, if they marry a fisherman, I'm just going to be right with them, you know. I just, it's got a lot of heartaches and stuff at times. Weather's bad and this and that, and they close an area to you and tell you you can't fish there anymore. And
red tide.
Different things. We're involved with red tide right now at home. It's hurt us pretty bad, but we'll keep on doing it. They'll always be fishing. And we've got a historical marker in our village now, a grant to do a little research. And maybe with our fishing festivals and programs like this program here and things to educate the people, maybe they won't be too down on us. It seems like people come to our area to visit. They think we're very unique and very interested in us. And then all of a sudden, a lot of cases after they move there as a permanent residence, they don't want us there. They feel like they're in competition with us for that resource. And in many cases, we're not even fishing for the same species. But we just had an incident in our bay just a few months ago where a phosphate plant, and I'm not pointing my finger at phosphate plants because I don't like to point fingers, but we had an incident where a lot of stuff was dumped in the water that killed lots of fish and ran the fishery that I'm involved in right now, just ran those fish out of the bay entirely. No one seemed to be concerned how it affected us. No one has come to us and said, gee, you guys are hurt by this? Are you being affected by this? No one knows and no one cares. And it, you know, I think it's important. And a lot of times, you know, if they'll listen to what some of our input, you know, maybe they'll find an answer to some of the real problems. We're all part of the problem. I'm not trying to put the blame on anyone else, but we have to be concerned about our environment. I think that's the main thing.
Okay, I think we all agree with that. And I think most of us would agree. Yeah, all right. And I think we would all agree that fishing communities and fishing families like the Taylors and the Bennetts and the many other families who are with us this weekend constitute a distinctive and important part of Florida's culture that should be preserved. The different traditional ways of life that we see demonstrated around us today should be better understood so that we can understand the successes and the difficulties of people that may live in circumstances different from our own. So can we thank the Taylors and the Bennetts for...
Lawrence. I know he's got a schedule, but I want to tell you this one. You know, fishermen are a breed of their own. And a man takes his wife out fishing, you know. She's always complaining. Well, this guy took his wife out, and he went out in this awful little skiff, and they didn't have but about that much freeboard left. And he come back into the dock, and he says, call the reporter and tell him to come out here and look at this huge fish I got. And they got the reporter, and they got him out there, and the reporter says, well, what in the world happened? He says, you carried your wife out there, and he says, you come in just you and the fish. And about that time, she come up, and she said, yeah, he's a determined fisherman. He threw her overboard and brought the fish home.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you for letting us talk to you.
Okay. In just a moment or two, we're going to have the... next to the final workshop today, my program is limp here, which will be about traditional methods of navigation and finding fish. And I'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a couple of fishermen to talk to you about this sort of traditional knowledge.